Welcome to Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks, your wallet's favorite show. I am your co-host, James Parker. How you doing? What are we, halfway through the week? Feels like 2 weeks already. If you have a financial situation and you're not quite sure what to do, give us a call. Gregory just stepped out for a second. He'll be right back. 504-260-0995. No, I'm not even going to make the mistake that thinking you actually want to talk to me. I mean, Gregory's a Hall of Fame financial advisor. Of course, you'd rather ask him. I have some other good topics coming up on today's show. I want to talk about why so many people are retiring later than their forefathers, than the generations that came before us. And a lot of this is going to have to do with the way some certain entitlements are structured. So you can probably see where that's going. Gregory had a great little article that he emailed today. In fact, you know, we always talk about the app and saying hi to us on Facebook Live and Periscope, but there's the old-fashioned way where you actually email somebody. And Gregory found a really cool article that's 18 industries that millennials are killing. And I'm not going to go through the whole list right now, but I'll give you a preview. I had no idea that the millennial generation was not down with mayonnaise. What's wrong with mayonnaise? I could understand a lot of the issues that they're having and their differing taste from the people that came before them, but man, you don't like mayonnaise? Well, something's wrong with you. So, well, it's a fun list. We'll get to it in just a second. Also, we have a little bit more of a breakdown on what happened with the, what's it called, USMCA? Yeah, it's like USMC, like the Marine Corps, then you just add an A, USMCA. That's the trade deal that sort of replaced NAFTA. It's the new three-way trade agreement from the United States, Mexico, and Canada. And it's amazing. If you read differing articles from different sources on this one topic, you will think these people are not reading the same bill. On one side, you have people are putting forward evidence. This is the greatest trade agreement in the history of ever. And this is going to help jobs. It's going to make the economy stronger. And this is going to help poor Americans. On the other side of the aisle, they're saying this is just NAFTA with a new name slapped on the top of it. And just very minor changes. It's like not redesigning the car, just moving where the cup holders are. So we'll throw some information at you and you decide. Of course, the truth is going to be somewhere in the middle, but we'll let you make that decision for yourself. Another reminder here, basketball season's well underway. We have football season stacked on top of that. So if you turn on the radio to hear us and we are not there, well, then you need the Winning at Life app. Download the app. We are always on the stream, and the app's great for if you want to watch us. You're just a couple of thumb pushes away from seeing the video feed of this show as well, and you can listen to us on demand. So if we're not on live, you can check the podcast out and just listen to the last episode you missed. Good stuff there. The Winning at Life app, your wallet's favorite app. So one of the campaign promises here was redoing NAFTA. And it's one of these things that doesn't get a whole lot of applause when you're at the rallies because this is sort of a heady topic and it really only directly affects a couple of people. And by a couple of people, I mean importers and exporters, the only people who are directly affected by it. Even though most of the country is indirectly affected by it, there's no real raw emotion. You know, there's no real movement. It's like, we want free trade. When do we want it now? No one's chanting for that, right? I mean, they'll go have rallies for a minimum wage, or they don't like how the police are handling things in their community, or, you know, for Me Too issues. But for free trade, just doesn't gather the amount of emotion and the amount of vigor. So let's just rewind the clock here, and I'm going to play a little bit of Donald Trump. I'm going to play a little bit of Justin Trudeau, the Canadian premier, on what the NAFTA context has been from 2016 up until and through this summer.
There has never been a trade deal as bad as NAFTA.
NAFTA has killed us. Our stupid politicians have killed us.
We will terminate it until a brand new and productive deal can be signed.
We're working very hard to make sure that our neighbor to the south recognizes how good NAFTA is.
No NAFTA deal is better than a bad NAFTA deal. And we are going to remain firm on that principle.
As Canadians, we're polite, we're reasonable, but we also will not be pushed around.
All right, so that's the discussion up until we finally got the announcement that we have the new agreement.
We have successfully completed negotiations on a brand new deal to terminate and replace NAFTA and the NAFTA trade agreements with an incredible new U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement.
And it was kind of fun when they were having the press conference for this. People kept trying to get off topic, and he was like, nope, that's not on topic. We're not going to talk about that right now. We're going to talk about trade. And it does kind of seem rude because you're not used to seeing it. But then again, I wish they would do that at all press conferences. We're clearly here with a specific topic in mind, and you guys just want to ask whatever you want to ask about. Well, that's not how this is going to work. I'm president now, and we can talk about more than one thing. We can walk and chew gum at the same time. So one of the things that we've been watching with this new NAFTA deal is how major industries are going to be affected, but also we're also watching this as what we see is the template for what we're probably going to get China to lean towards. We're not going to get them to sign an agreement that's this friendly as far as business goes and this reciprocal. But it's good to see what direction our negotiations are going to be pulling them in, because we have some new things that weren't really an issue when NAFTA was signed in the mid-90s, like digital trade, these cutting-edge biologics, and these complex drug designs where all you got to do is go hack the computers at Pfizer and you can make your own generic and undercut an entire market. That's not really something that was too much of an issue when this stuff was signed. What was NAFTA, 1994, 95, something around there? And the copyrights and intellectual property situations have gotten much more complex since the mid-90s, given that you can just about stream anything anywhere, but that also means you can just about pirate anything anywhere, and piracy has become so easy. So there's a lot of things to deal with here. And the smallest group that probably has the biggest voice is the farmers. You know, farmers and ranchers are just probably about a single-digit share of the population. But this is something that they're more likely to be importers and exporters than the rest of us. So this is something they've definitely been keeping an eye on. And while we didn't see a whole lot of movement in our situation that we had with Mexico when it comes to agricultural products, apparently, I didn't know that until that last year, Canada had some pretty funky tariffs set up against imports. And I don't know, maybe they have a really strong cattle lobby in Canada that's bought off a few of those MPs. Isn't that what they're called? Ministers of Parliament? Is that right? And then they also have a pretty strong dairy lobby, because, man, if you make eggs or cheese in Canada, you have just put up a wall, a castle wall, and a moat around your industry. And supposedly, I haven't got the specific numbers here, but supposedly some of those walls have been broken down a little bit, because the number that was thrown around, it was like 290-300% tariff on imported cheese products into Canada. And that counted from the United States. It's like, hey, dude, aren't we buddies? We have good cheese. You don't like our cheese? No, their cheese lobby just didn't want to compete with ours. And so they can basically charge whatever they want. Or really, what usually happens in these tariff situations where you get some sort of favorable tariff is Canada will raise the price on imported cheese 300%. And so the local cheese manufacturers will raise their prices about 280%. You know, they'll still get the raise. They'll just undercut everybody else. So as new details come in about that, we'll be passing them along. But I guess so far, so good. You know, there's a lot of people who are critical of NAFTA, and if this isn't significantly different than NAFTA, then it's just a PR win, because it's kind of hard to write a headline against this, because, again, people just don't get emotional about things like that. There's no real visceral attachment to that topic. All right, something else we're going to get to. Something significant is happening in Social Security. I don't know if it's because people are listening to this show. I doubt that's that much of an influence, but people are retiring and taking their benefits later. And this is later. You got to take a long time scale for this one, because it's been pretty even in the last few years. But in 1997, 57% of men claiming their retirement benefits under Social Security were 62. And we fall out of our chair when we find out it's more than half these days. It was even worse 20 years ago. More people were turning it on the first year they were eligible, taking the biggest haircut that Social Security gave them. It's literally the least amount of money you can get from Social Security on a monthly basis, turning it on at 62. We had 57% of men doing that. So by 2017, that share had dropped to 34%. 34%, because people were electing, they wanted to claim later. They wanted to get more money. Some of them did the math. Some of them, I guess fewer people are able to retire otherwise at 62. And if you're going to keep working and you're going to make above the income limit, and then there's the clawback on Social Security, it's just not worth it. So that's actually a good trend, something that I like to see, because if 34% of men in 2017 turned their benefit on at 62, well, that means 66% didn't, and they're doing better. I mean, that 57% turning it on immediately, just horrible. So the average age of a new male beneficiary, if you want to look at it from that statistic, has risen by just about a full year in the last 20 years. So that's some interesting stuff. In 1990, 38% of Americans aged 62 to 64 were working. By 2017, that share had risen to 53%. So that kind of strengthens the side of the coin. You know, there's many different reasons, but one of them was, hey, if you're still going to be working in that middle ground between turning it on early in your full retirement age, it just makes less and less sense. Well, part of this also lets me know that, you know, wages have gone up, so it's not like there's less incentive to work in those ages. I just think we're more healthy. So it's not that big of a, it's not really that old, 62 to 64. If someone dies when they're 64, you're like, what happened to them? They died a little early. And when Social Security was founded, that was the life expectancy. That was about the average. But man, if someone died at 64, you'd be disappointed. You're like, that's tragic. What happened? Was it a car wreck? So good news. I would like to think some of that push was from people listening to us, but you know, math has only fought so hard. And what does this mean? If this trend continues and people are going to be getting more out of their Social Security, and if they raise that full retirement age a little bit, that's going to give another incentive for it to be pushed up. And it looks like things are getting a little better as far as that goes. If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, call Gregory, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Welcome back. This is Winning at Life. It is the Daily Wrap, you know, the program. Thanks for joining us. As always, we appreciate it. We just need you to participate. What's that financial question? Is it about what's going to happen in this market? You know, it's had a bull run for like decades. It hasn't been decades, but, you know, it kind of seems like it's been a while. And actually, we're going to talk about that on tomorrow's show. What might derail this? What are some of the signs? So we got a couple of pieces we're going to cover and give you some food for thought.
And you eat the food.
Yeah. Eat the food and then you eat some more food.
We got to stop that. Killing me.
But you know what you can do? You can get the phone and make the call. 504-260-0995. That's the way to participate in the show. So we could talk about your lump sum pension, when to turn on that Social Security. Did another income planning session today. A lot of fun. I love doing that stuff. The Winning at Life app, you can text, email us, even call us from your touch screen. A lot of resources there. Free download. Just go to your app store and type in Winning at Life. That phone number is, get the phone, make the call, 504-260-0995.
What if we do that on the air?
Did what on the air?
Your present.
Are you wanting to do it on the air?
I wasn't thinking about it until just now, but
now that you open that can.
All right. So, hey, just a little secret of the pros here. It's Gregory's birthday today. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you.
What are you, 29?
So much Facebook response. And
all right. So here, let me.
Tweets and Snapchats, texts, emails, phone calls from around the country. It's like, wow, this is like crazy this year.
Okay, so let me explain what we got here. If you're watching on Periscope or Facebook Live, you can see this. If not, you can come back and watch it later.
I didn't mention that. We're streaming live, Facebook Live and Periscope.
Okay, so you have a Dornax bag there, and the bag is I spent a whole dollar on that, but I just wanted to make
you're
it official.
Being green, huh?
Well, that's
so those plastic bags that last 100 years.
Don't you dare accuse me of trying to save landfill space. I was going cheap on the wrapping paper, basically. All right, so what this is an old...
Yeah, that'd cost a lot more than a buck.
Yeah, this is an old-fashioned kit, okay? So my preference on old-fashions is rye whiskey, and I have only had this kind that I got you, the Michter's. I only had it once when I went to New York, remember, back in June to go to that conference up there.
Yeah.
I stayed with Miss Parker's cousin, and he had that in his deck, and it was fantastic. Okay, so that's one ingredient.
So it goes well with big ice?
Absolutely.
Ice spheres?
Hey, yeah. this is a big ice drink. This goes in an old-fashioned glass and a big ice. So to make the old-fashioned, you need the rye whiskey. The cherry is just the garnish. You need the bitters, and you need a sugar cube. There's the sugar cube right there.
Okay.
Yeah. And
then there should be the bitters right here.
Right.
What are bitters?
Bitters. It's what you use to make an old fashioned. I don't know anything
aromatic else. Cocktail bitters. So that's in the title.
Yeah.
Seychelles bitters. So how does this work? A bitter drink? You make it bitter, but then you add some sugar?
Here's what you do. You take the sugar cube and you put it in the rocks glass, and then you put some bitters on it and sort of melt it with a dash of water as well. And you muddle it. You know what that means to muddle it? You just squish it with a spoon, or if you have like a little pistol or whatever, you know, muddle it like they do with the mojitos. And then you do the ice on top of that, and then you do the whiskey into that. So you're supposed to garnish it with a cherry and a citrus peel. Some people use lemon. I prefer orange. Sometimes I like to do the orange bitters too.
Is it
too.
Zest, or they zest it?
Yeah, they take the little peel and they twist it.
Oh, I
it does nothing.
That.
You don't have to do that. That's basically for decoration. When I make it
fancy.
At home, yeah, when I make it at home, I usually don't even bother with the orange.
Okay, the bitter's liquid.
Yes.
Of course, cherry is a cherry. So what is it you're pressing?
The sugar cube. The sugar cube's going to go in the glass first.
Oh, first.
Yes, the sugar.
So you kind of press and break up the cube, kind of.
Right. Now, the thing about the old-fashioned is, if you're an aficionado, if you're doing this at home, the trick is you want to find your specific perfect combination on the amount of bitters versus the amount of water that's going to go in it, because everything else is kind of set out for you. You're going to do a shot of whiskey, and you're going to do a sugar cube. So the only two real variables is water versus bitters. So you do this little taste test on yourself.
So it doesn't matter about the ice melting some?
It kind of helps. And just in the same way when you have bourbon by itself, you know, it kind of feels like it unlocks it a little bit.
Well, we're going to have to do this on one of our nights off, James. And
we're not doing this before a show.
No, we're not doing it when we're doing a show or before a show. It'd have to be after a show or a night off.
Well, I'll tell you what's really cool about this drink is, do you remember meeting Cruzy? John Cruz, the guy that runs the TV stations over there, WGNO and the CW?
Yeah.
And when we were at Pasta and Pacini last year, he had a bitters and sugar and water mix in a little tincture bottle, and he had it in his jacket pocket with a little medicine dropper. So we would go to the bar and get bourbon, and he would put, if we got two shots, he would put two little squirts from the medicine dropper in there, and it was like an instant old fashioned, and I thought it was brilliant, and I've always liked that drink as it is, but just thought I'd pass it along, and it's a good little birthday thing. If you don't like it, then give it to me.
Oh, I know.
You're gonna love that whiskey by itself either way, though, whether or not you dig the old fashioned, because not everybody does. This isn't an everybody likes drink.
Well, no, there's bourbon or something you gave me a couple years ago. Just it was from Texas, real heavy, smoky.
It was the Scotch, yeah.
Flavor, and I just couldn't do that. And I was honest with you, and you said, "Good, I like that stuff." So
yeah, it tastes.
You're
like
not offended. You're like, oh, yeah, I'll drink it.
Like if you had a little bit of distillate and then a campfire exploded in your mouth. Yeah, that's about what that one tasted like. That was the brimstone. And I understand that's not a drink for everyone.
This isn't. And you had told me that when you gave it to me that it's not for everyone.
Yeah, and Scotch purists definitely don't like it.
Well, just so the streamers can get a look at what I get from you, and we'll get to try it out here.
And of course, if you're wondering, future. Those in Chalmette, yes, that is Domino. That's the Domino sugar cubes I got for the drink. Kept it local. Kept you happy. I know we have some listeners that work there. See, I was thinking of you today. And thanks to Dornex for basically being close enough to my
helping
house.
Helping you out.
Yeah. All right. It's a good time to do the numbers. You want to knock this out real quick?
Yeah, we'll go ahead.
Okay. The numbers. Welcome to the numbers segment on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. This is where we give you a snapshot of everything that happened in the financial world while you were out today winning at life. And it's a lot of green and some records being broken. Gregory?
Well, what do you think caused that? Well, I know the answer. Jobs.
Yeah, right. The
ADP came out, had better numbers, and everything is rolling along.
I'm really interested to see what gets released at 7:30 in the morning on Friday, the jobs report.
Yeah, that's not tomorrow morning, but Friday. Now, look, they do differ, but the expectation is that number's going to come out positive more so than the expectation as well. You know, we're seeing job growth. Inflation's kind of hitting the Fed's numbers, but we're seeing wage growth. And it's the example, I've already felt it as a firm. You know, my daytime job, run a financial advisory firm and money managers. And yeah, we are paying more for talent. And just like Amazon yesterday, they're paying more for warehouse workers. So let's put it this way. They're paying more for warehouse talent.
Hey, there is enough of a talent in there that they have to pay more. So there's
across the industry. We've seen it going in the trucking industry. Those wages have jumped. Got to, you know, and then there was something I heard this morning. It's last quarter was like record increase in truck orders, big trucks.
Oh, I missed that one. So that's
stuff
fantastic.
Is needing to move and they need equipment.
All right. Well, over there, you got the book, the history book, crack it open because the Dow finished at another all time high. And it actually shed about 100 points right before the close. It was up a whole lot more than this. In fact, it was tickling 27,000 for most of the day. It finished at 26,828.39. That's it. That's the highest all-time closing in the history of the Dow Jones. Going back to the 1800s, it was up 0.2% today. S&P was up about 0.1%. That looks like an all-time high for our S&P. And the NASDAQ was up 0.3%. Russell was up almost 0.5%. So it's green all the way across the indices.
And earnings period starts now. So they're expecting that to come in just like last quarter. Most of them reported very well. You'll have those that miss here and there, but it's expected to go well. Also, the only possible concern. Well, we've got some other talk. We're going to talk to you once again tomorrow night. It's like, what could derail this? I'll just give you an idea. There probably might be some volatility, and there's reasons for it. We'll talk about that. But with that, overall, the way this is headed, because the Fed kind of does this, you know, as far as we can see into the future, we're not raising rates. Okay, then the next year they raise rates. So, you know, I always kind of hate seeing long term. I would rather say the near long term. I see this moving forward.
All right, we'll do bonds, gold. We'll finish out the numbers coming up next. If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, call Gregory, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
I'm the mirror of my right. Breeze blowing in. Welcome back. Winning at Life. We're here every evening at 7. Look, basketball season's here, so those listening, probably we're getting preempted 1, 2, or 3 times a week for the next several months. If you have the Winning at Life app, you can jump over and grab us on the stream. You can go to the iHeart Radio stream and pick us up. It's one reason we recommend you join the Winning at Life Nation. Download the app. If you'd like to call, you know what it is. Get the phone, make the call, 504-260-0995. So we do this every 7. Remember, 10 to 1 on Saturdays, too. We're here for you. So we were at the numbers. Treasuries moved up some today. We're at 3.189% in the yield. There's more upside to come. It's got a price in the next quarter point that I predict is going to happen in December.
So we're really
we have strong basis for that as well.
About 2 months away, two months and a week.
Yeah. So we're expecting that, and that moved up that much since the last rate hike. And so think about that if you're thinking about locking in a mortgage rate. Crude oil, $76.06 a barrel. That makes the Brent crude at $85.83. Gold, just above $1,200, real close to it, $1,201.90. Silver dropped off a little bit today. It's at $14.64. So anything significant on the short sheet?
The short sheet is feeling like sort of the calm before the storm because we know earnings season is about to happen. The happiest news over here is seeing Caterpillar gain 2% in one day because that's one of those bellwether stocks.
We like that.
Yeah, because like Twitter gaining almost 3% today means nothing because they're haphazard all over the place, can't make a profit. But Caterpillar's a different story. We also like seeing GE rebound a little bit. They had some change at the top a couple days ago. It was positive for them yesterday, positive for them again today.
Yeah, because things weren't going well. So time to make a change there. I was wondering about Fizz. How's Fizz doing?
Fizz was down today, but they're above 100.
Yeah, 108.82, their close.
That's kind of my memory's watermark on if they're above 100, they're doing well.
ResMed's off a little bit. AT&T at 33.92, kind of in that range. Nike at 82.50, off a third of a percent. We had Under Armour up 1.78%. It's interesting. Walmart 94.07, off a little more than 1%.
You going to bring up Lululemon? Because they had that gigantic surge at the end of August, beginning of September. And
well, geez, they've still climbed above that. Rocking. Yeah. They were up almost 1% today. $1.32, $161.52.
Yes. And a year ago, where was it?
Them and Nike have the largest margins on, you know, when we speak of athletic apparel and such as that. Those two compete for the largest margins. They're doing okay.
When did we put them on the short sheet? I'm looking at the chart here.
Around 80 bucks. Yeah, that had gotten our attention because it moved up to that. And then since, you know, those companies may want to get on our short sheet because they do well.
More winners than losers. I don't know if we're necessarily doing that on purpose because, I mean, we have Tesla up there. It's not like we're trying to win everything.
No, you can't get them all right. You know, well, that, and we didn't put Tesla on there because we thought it was going somewhere. It's just actually Tesla. It just is kind of that quandary, like, why?
It's just the name is all it is. Yeah. How powerful is the name? Weren't we just talking about that yesterday? How powerful is just the name? Speaking of, just the name may be enough to resurrect Toys R Us. Did you see that they stopped the final burial of that corporation at the last second?
Yeah, I was trying to find something on that. We'll probably have more to report on that, but I had read a story about a fella that was trying to buy Toys R Us before it went into bankruptcy, and he felt like he was just being ignored and it was just being pushed that way. And I wonder if it's him and his group that have pulled this out at the brink, because he thought it was a company worth saving and could do something with. So we're going to see hopefully we can have more to tell you on a little background on what is happening tomorrow.
Yeah, I can see there's a place in the world for a toy store, because buying online is going to replace a lot, but it's hard to replace like walking through a toy store and getting to handle the toys and play with it a little bit and sort of test it out. And that's what Toys R Us really is. It's sort of the test drive for some of these toys. All right, now you got your papers out and there's stuff highlighted on there and you got your business face on.
Yeah, well, it goes to our topic of the evening, that millennials are kind of affecting a lot of industries, and we're going to touch on 18 of them. You already touched on mayonnaise.
Shocked. That's who are these people? What do you mean you don't like mayonnaise? But I think this might be just part of a larger health conscious trend. Because sales of mayonnaise over like the 6 year span in this report here, would it fall like 6%? Let me go back up to the mayonnaise.
I don't know. I can't have a hamburger without some mayonnaise on it. But you know, I guess I'm old school. But I use less than I used to.
I'm starting to not believe the whole cholesterol thing at all.
You just give me an extra heaping on there.
You know what I do?
But it's about flavor. It's kind of that traditional burger. And I like it on my turkey sandwich. I like it on my chicken sandwich. And if you're making a turkey salad, you kind of need some mayo in that. It has its place. Gosh, what would we do without it?
All right. I'm from a pasture out in the middle of nowhere, so I think we use mayonnaise more than a common man. And I was surprised to learn that most people do not put mayonnaise on their grilled cheese sandwich. I love.
I have never heard of such.
Don't put a lot
blasphemy
on there.
Blasphemy.
Or it'll get nasty real quick. But if you put a little bit on there, you know, it's got the vinegar tang to it. It is awesome.
Yeah. Well, I like a little mayo on my chili dogs as well. There's.
Ooh.
Place for it, my roast beef sandwich.
Mayo, yeah, with chili. So really loading up, huh?
Well, you know, like a good chili sausage dog.
Well, look, you're soft pedaling this list. This isn't industries that are being affected by millennials. This is industries that are being killed by millennials.
Okay. Mayonnaise sales fell 6.7% in the U.S. between 2012 and 2017.
Yeah, it was close.
So you had to go out and what is it here? Hellman's and Kraft had to slash prices to keep shoppers interested. Well, hey, I appreciate the discount because I'm buying it anyhow.
Thanks, guys.
You know, so yeah, we appreciate that. Now go back to our triplets that Stacy and I have. They won't have nothing to do with mayonnaise, so the next generation's not helping them out. And, you know, they kind of fall into that millennial group.
Are they still millennials, or are they the next thing?
You know what? Well,
I think we're about ready to start calling the next group out. That would be Generation Z is what we're calling them now.
What is that? I've got somewhere in this here. What's 18 to 34, and they're 20.
Okay.
So, yeah. Technically, what has happened is, as we've gone along, the millennials have increased because they're just a like-minded group with the gadgets, immediate satisfaction and stuff. You know what they like? They like their cheeseburger with nothing but ketchup.
All right. So they're children. They're children. Yeah. No mayonnaise, but ketchup, huh?
No mayonnaise, just ketchup only.
That's how my first grader likes it. Yeah.
And then, you know, and actually one of them will order it. Yeah. I want it with nothing, but I want ketchup on the side. I guess that's for dipping maybe. And they'll dip about anything in the ketchup. So have you ever dipped a grilled cheese in the ketchup? Maybe you should try that. I wouldn't know, cause I wouldn't do that.
Of course I have.
Casual dining chains. Got a lot to cover here. Like Buffalo Wild Wings, Ruby Tuesday, and Applebee's have faced sales slumps and dozens of restaurant closures as casual dining chains have struggled to attract customers and increase sales. Millennial consumers are more attracted than their elders to cooking at home, ordering delivery from restaurants, eating quickly, fast casual, quick serve restaurants. They're not about lingering around there. Got to go. You know, what is it? Moe's?
That's a fast casual, right?
That's a fast casual. They like more of that type. They're not wanting to go sit down and spend 30 or 40 minutes like I do.
All right,
or longer.
If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, you can call a Hall of Fame financial advisor, Gregory, on his birthday, and he'll give you a little bit of guidance. 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. Whiskey's supposed to
drown the memory. Welcome back. Winning at Life. Daily Wrap. We've just got a few minutes here. You're going to miss your chance. Get the phone. Make the call, 504-260-0995. Download the Winning at Life app. Join the nation. We've been going on how millennials are creating havoc out there. So we talked about casual dining chains, you know, are having problems, Buffalo Wild Wings, TGI Fridays. But look, I think with age, that may come back to that part of the dining industry. Traditional weddings. Couples are increasingly ditching banquet halls and hotel reception rooms in favor of unconventional venues such as barns and farms.
Sounds good to me.
You know, I was in Kansas a few weeks back and was at a banquet facility, and I'm telling you, it looked like a barn. It was nice on the inside, but I swear we were pulling up to a barn. Gravel road and everything there. But it was nice, and it was catered, but more so the millennials are looking to be in control and preferring to pay for it themselves so they can do it how they want to versus the parents.
And I think some of that is being pushed by social media, where in times past, the only people that would ever see your wedding is the people who are there and the handful of people who are subjected to your photos. But with social media, basically everyone you've ever known for the last 15 years, maybe going back to high school, is going to see it. You got to have the coolest location possible. We got married on this bridge and then we bungee jumped off of it. Things like that. I see that a lot. We climbed the side of this mountain and we got married at the peak of a mountain.
Yeah, I really get that, because it's about how they're showing up in their little video on Snapchat.
That's it.
And so, not so much Facebook, but it is. That's a positive thing. How do you show up? That's how I always look at business. How do we show up? So I see they're getting that early on. Never thought it about that way when I was 20. So this next one, I think you should cover it.
Beer. This is so disappointing.
You like beer? I like beer.
I like beer.
You drink beer?
I've drank some beer. Yeah. Sometimes I would go to parties in high school and we would drink beer.
You drink beer.
Yeah. Huh? And then in college, there was a couple times I drink. I've even thrown ice.
But millennials aren't necessarily liking beer.
Beer consumption among drinkers from 21 to 24 has fallen 3% per year for the last 15 years.
So when I saw that, I'll just interject here. It's making me thinking about when Budweiser and, you know, this Miller was sold to Budweiser. And of course, Budweiser was sold to somebody else. And that conglomerate that it owns is outside of the U.S. So maybe that was leading up to, you know, like, gosh, beer is slowing. We might should sell out while the getting's good, because they did.
Yeah. Well, that was in the middle of that trend. You're right. The thing is, they're not moving over to wine or liquor because those sales have stayed just about flat. It's just beer has gone down. Oh, okay. You're right. Thank you, Angie. We got to get to a couple of these calls here.
Oh, we have some calls?
Yeah. My screen froze. Angie kind of tapped me on the shoulder over here.
Okay. Knew something was up. Just one other point on that. You know, I like the craft beers, the micro brews and all. Could that be a trend of that that's not picked up here? Because they're looking at the big guys like Budweiser and Coors. And yeah, I would expect their stuff to be slowing.
It's not the amount of beer they bought or how much money they spent on it. It's consumption. So it's just the volume of beer.
Let's see what's going on.
Derek in Covington, thanks for hanging on. You're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Derek?
I just have a simple question. I have a son who's 1 year old now. And I was just wondering, what is the best move for me? Should I start investing in a 529 plan for him or should I just continue to invest in the Roth? And when it comes to age of to go to college, I just take money out of the Roth account for him?
You know, I really like the Roth as a college plan because you're not locked into having to use that money for college in case they don't need all of it or just don't want to head down that road. Everybody doesn't go to college, and nor should everyone in that case. However, if you put it in a 529 plan and then you apply for financial aid and such as that, they're going to spend your 529 plan first of all. Now, you could end up with putting some money there, but you know what? What's left over at the college is still your Roth money to keep building up for retirement as well. I would consider a Roth a part of what you're doing there.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that information. And I appreciate y'all putting y'all shows on a podcast. I don't get to listen to y'all at 7 o'clock every night, and I'll try to listen to it when I'm driving the next day.
Yeah, well, we're about to do some cool things with the podcast library to make it more timeless. Listenable, yeah. Timeless, and by topic. So we're going to be rolling that out soon.
Thanks, Derek.
Thanks, Derek.
We're not doing all this work for nothing, Gregory. This is great. Juan, awesome. New Orleans, you're next up on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. What can we do for you, Juan?
Hey, guys, I love beer too, guys.
Hey, right. Juan, welcome. Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, we like some beer.
Hey, and I not only love beer, but I think that drinking beer should not disqualify you from service in the Supreme Court, man.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you. I'd hate for it to disqualify me from hosting Winning at Life. There,
you're right.
You know, we just don't want to do it and drive. So that's one important thing: no driving while we're enjoying that.
Absolutely, I agree with you. Listen, I have a couple of stupid questions, but I trust that you guys are smart enough to turn the stupid questions into a very informative thing. Let me give you a little background really quick. I was a truck driver for 25 years over the road. During that time, I was doing pretty good money, but I was diabetic. And little by little, the diabetes started to eat up my health, and I was appointed. I couldn't drive the truck no more. I tried a few jobs beside driving, but my health was too deteriorated that I end up on disability. So I do receive Social Security as a disability, and here are my two questions. Number one, does this payment that the Social Security give me is going to last until I died, or there's going to be a point when it, we're going to run out and I'm going to be out of money?
That's on the Social Security is going to pay you from now on. Your disability check basically converts to your Social Security check when you turn full retirement age. And it's just going to keep coming to you every month until you die.
Okay. All right. Okay. That's not the number one. I appreciate that. And the other question is, now these days I'm doing Uber on the side to supplement my income. And Uber business is doing pretty good. So I am doing a decent amount of money. And I want to know, number one, how much money I can make without affecting my Social Security. In other words, that they will take it away. And the second part of this question is, how will they find out how much money I am making?
All right. So a quick search is being had over here on Gregory's laptop. And how will they find out is an interesting question, because implied in there is there a chance they won't find out? And we'll never operate under that model there. But I imagine Uber has some sort of reporting process. As much as governments around the country have been, you know, putting their heel on those guys, they're probably starting to cooperate in ways that I wouldn't even begin to risk not reporting that income. But as far as the specific numbers on how much you can make and if and when it'll affect your benefit, that's going to have to be answered
precisely
by Gregory.
Is no, if they're going to find by their own, or is me who have the responsibility to go knock on their doors and tell, oh, guys, listen, I'm making this much money. Do you want to take some away from Social Security? Whatever. I don't know. I mean, what is the legality of it? That was my point.
According to Social Security Administration, private pension and insurance benefits do not affect Social Security disability payments. Payments such as VA administration benefits, some state and local benefits, unemployment benefits, supplemental Social Security income do not reduce a person's SSDI. There is an amount that you can make and then you're okay with. I don't have that number in front of me. That's something you could call the office and we will drill down and get a little bit further to you. I just can't gather that information for you quickly, but you can make some earned income. Gosh, and it just top of my head, it seems like you can make $1,000 a month. Somewhere in that range. There's an allowable amount before it starts affecting your disability. Let's see. It looks like earnings more than $1,180 a month. That's it. Yeah, I was right, about $1,000 a month, but it's about almost $1,200 a month you can earn without it affecting your disability benefits. If you're blind, you can make almost $2,000 a month. But it kind of be hard to be an Uber driver and be blind. So I don't know if that's helping you there. Thank you for the call, Juan.
Yeah, I was going to say Uber probably frowns on blind drivers.
Yeah. And we'll pick up the rest of our millennial list tomorrow. We got a few more companies that we'll cover it on the front end. A lot to cover tomorrow.
All right. Your home away from the show, winningatlife.com and the Winning at Life app. Go download that app. You can catch our podcast on demand anytime, or you can actually watch the show on demand at any time. Winning at Life app, it's free in your app store right now. Thanks for hanging out. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at